It is time for the Media Beat with David Tarachuk. David joins us, of course, on a Friday morning. We rebroadcast this all next week and also right after our noontime news once a week as well here on Robinhood Radio. Besides being with us on a Friday morning, David is also a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief and his own website, themediabeat.us. We say good morning. Good morning, David.
Well, hello. It's good to be with you again from the media capital of the world, New York City. How is it in Connecticut? What proportion of your local population are wearing masks?
Well, we don't have to.
Question of the day.
Well, you see, we all listen to the president. We don't have to worry because it's cold here, and we don't have to worry.
Yeah,
you're safe. Yeah. Well, you know, it's. I'm glad you started off with that because now. People know I'm not a Trump supporter, but this isn't a bash Trump moment. What it is, it's a bash the whole administration moment. The press conference that Donald Trump had the other day should have just featured the folks from the Center for Disease Control and the medical people talking about what they talked about. Because if you take their clips out and you watch them individually, you felt better. You felt that, okay, we've got people working on this. The right people are talking about it, blah, 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 blah. But the president, who for some reason decided to go off on a personal riff, just took all that they had to say and basically laid it to waste and left people more confused.
I'm afraid so, yeah.
And you can time this, folks. If you look at the huge tumbles in the stock market, one of the biggest tumbles came right after that press conference. That's when a big tumble really, really started. And the president's job is not to know how many people died of flu. We all know flu is a horrible disease and kills a lot of people and changes every year. We all know that we have probably the best healthcare and the best researchers in the world. Whether or not you can afford or not is another thing. We all know those things, but when there's something going on this big, people just want to be assured. And I think it would have been better if just the right people would have spoken there, because nobody came out of that press conference assured.
Yeah, and you say he went off on a personal riff for some reason. Well, we're stuck with a president who will always go off on a personal riff, no matter how objective the demands of the moment are. And you're right, a risk of a major epidemic or even a pandemic is the sort of time when you turn to your leaders and hope for competence as well as confidence. And in some ways, we saw that on display. But if the experts, these National Institutes of Health and all the other apparatus we have, the very good health giving and disease fighting apparatus that we have, if it's undercut by a feckless and irresponsible set of speculations by and an indication that he seems on balance, though he keeps veering one way or the other. He said in one moment he'll say there could be a big increase. At other times he said it's not inevitable and it's quite rather unlikely. If he undercuts the experts, which of course is a kind of knee-jerk reaction throughout this administration anyway, everyone's taking their lead from are taking their lead from the president and denying the value of expertise. This is one case where absolutely, I'm sure just about everybody in the country would agree, expertise is something that we would value and we need and most of us are grateful for.
And then the final thing that I'll say about this is I don't care that he named Mike Pence the vice president as the person to lead up. But what was really strange is everybody who's an authority has got to report to Pence before they can release information. That shouldn't be the steps that happen here.
No, that sounds like the Banana Republic we've been talking about recently. That's what countries do that manipulate and censor and basically deny the public information in an autocratic manner. It stinks. I mean, lots about the appointment of Pence have a distinctly concerning aroma. For instance, Trump actually beginning his lauding of Pence by saying he's got experience in the field. Well, quite obviously, he doesn't. And indeed, what experience he has with health matters are very threatening. I mean, very negative. I mean, his response to HIV/AIDS, for instance, was to dig in his heels and refuse to have clean needle exchanges in his own state when he was governor, and led to one of the greatest and most serious increases in HIV/AIDS in any state in the union. His leadership qualities and health matters are execrable and totally inappropriate. In fact, hugely counterproductive for this particular task. And yet, what do we get in terms of a government pronouncement? All we get is Trump's, as you say, a very personal riff on the matter.
It's just one of those things you want to hear, you know. And also, over the course of the past 2.5 years, the CDC has really been stripped of a lot of its experts and a lot of its employees that can turn things around really quick. And I'm not going to let the media off on this one, some of the media off on this one also. I tend to think that the media takes this, and then because of what the president did at his press conference, the media takes off. And I don't think people should be scared into worrying about the coronavirus. I think what people have to be aware of is that it's a virus that's similar to the flu and SARS and other viruses that come around. And we deal with this on a yearly basis, and this is just another new virus that has popped up. And I think people have got to calm down. This is not some space virus. This is not some virus that's going to kill you right away. That's the other thing that really has me in a quandary here. And then when you tie in the media coverage of that with what is happening in the stock market, it creates almost like a panic situation. And I that's probably the worst thing that you can have, is a panic situation instead of an orderly looking at the problem and trying to solve it.
Yeah, when it comes to the matter of communicating with the public, which after all is the main concern of those of us who monitor the media, you've got a situation in which, yes, the chief executive is trying to minimize things. The media have an inbuilt, I think, it's hard to avoid it, an inbuilt tendency towards exaggeration, or at least sensationalizing stories. There's nothing so, or very few things, as attention-grabbing as yelling plague, and we know that, and it puts an extra burden of responsibility on the media. They do need to call the authorities to account and say that point out ways in which the situation is not being handled very well. For instance, the whistleblower inside the Health and Human Services Administration, who's saying that the staff members who were sent to receive the evacuees from the Far East from quarantine over there and put in further quarantine at air bases in California and Texas were not handled very well by the Health and Human Services employees who were sent to greet them. And there's a distinct possibility of they're not being properly protected. and therefore possibly agents of further contamination and infection. That's the kind of story that needs to be told. But on the other hand, it doesn't have to be flammed up to the kind of level of j'accuse and an indication that everything is wrong with America's preparations. It's clearly not true. Well, a time like this needs facts. I feel like Sergeant Friday here, saying, just the facts, ma'am, yeah. Just the facts. What we don't want is either chief executive tries to play it down and dismiss it because, of course, he's frightened of appearing as if he's not in charge. So what does he do? He brings up somebody that he can blame for when it fails, if it fails. His wingman, who is such a useful tool in such situations. And the contrast between his attempts to distance himself from it and minimize it are in great contrast to the media. And I agree that the media is not doing a great job at the moment of staying in that steady, sober area in the middle of all this field and giving us information and not cause for panic, as you rightly describe it. What's going on in financial markets is clearly a sign of panic, and that's really what you about how many people are wearing masks. It's clearly a consciousness now with people who keep up what's going on. I don't think we're getting to the stage of people panicking, quite clearly not yet. On the other hand, it's a touchy area, and people can be very easily scared into really deep concern and perhaps sometimes do what fearful people sometimes do and start to panic I don't want to get into a exaggerating mode myself, but that road doesn't lead anywhere good.
It's what's funny, the media does such a good job year in, year out of educating people about the flu, okay, without panicking them, stating the facts and saying get flu shots. And then the government gets that information out to all the local health agencies and they say, and so there's no big suspicious fear of the flu. Just like in the wintertime when there's a cold outbreak and people are dying because of cold, the media has a great job of reporting it, how people can get to warming centers and things like that. You would think with all this experience year in, year out, that they would take something like this and overlay that template on this when they report on it. And I'm not saying there aren't media outlets that are doing this right. There are. But then there are other media outlets that triple on this, the slightly smaller media outlets that jump on this story because it's a big story and they feel that they have to push the story.
Yeah, and pushing the story can mean, here's an opportunity for us to get more eyeballs on our material. And that's always been the urge of sensationalist press. It's a push and a pull effect in the economics of our medium. That's the trouble. It's hard to get away from, and as you say, the older, wiser, more sober heads in the business are usually in organizations which are big and stable and in a sense, can afford to be sober and calm and untroubled by, major news that they could get overexcited by. People are out to make a name for themselves and organizations that are out to increase their market share are the ones we have to be leery about.
I want to move on to a different subject, and I think you'll find this. There's a report out today on Axios. Ad spending so far on the 2020 primary has topped $1 billion. Now, remember, folks, it wasn't that long ago when President Obama was elected for the first time. The total campaign from primaries to the end of the election was $1 billion. Well, this is $1 billion to this date, and out of that $1 billion, none other than almost $600 million has been spent by one candidate.
Yep. Yes, the real billionaire who's running for office. Mike Bloomberg, former mayor of my hometown, is certainly, you know, behaving like a billionaire who wants to buy the election, even if that's not what he says he is. The sheer vulgar excess of the spending that he's gone in for is bound to be, in many quarters at least, a massive turnoff. But on the other hand, it's already shown how much he can get himself into the game by the spending. If he hadn't taken all that extraordinary amount of media advertising, bought it, he wouldn't have been in the debate that he got into before the primaries of, well, before the last primary, before Super Tuesday. And he's in. He didn't make a very good showing, and he got better with the next one, perhaps, even in the mess that the next debate in South Carolina was. But he would never have been there if he hadn't bought his way in. I mean, that's not a good emblem to carry in front of you as a campaigner. I'm the biggest spender is not, I don't think, going to go down all that well with the American public. On the other hand, they may not care. It may be one of those cases where he is regarded by many people, at least, as a competent manager and someone we do want instead of the person we've got, whose management credentials are withering as we speak. I just you can't know. Electoral prediction in this country and in my old home country too, Britain, has proved such a tricky area to venture into, and I'm not going to do that. But he's positioning himself well structurally by throwing all this money around, but whether it's enough to win hearts and minds in the voting booth, I very much doubt.
Let's take a look at people across the world, David. What this world is now, it's such a small world. I mean, the outbreak of the coronavirus from China, which is, it seems to be leveling off in China now, but now because people travel, it's a small world.
But spreading to almost 50 other countries now. We're talking about whether exaggeration or minimizing are appropriate, and of course neither are. But the facts of the matter are, as Joe Biden keeps saying, but not about this subject on which he's been quietly calm, I think. That we are in a position where it's factually a serious matter, not an occasion for panic, but a serious matter. Yeah, we have an international situation that's very worrying. And from my days working with the World Health Organization, I know that these things can turn into horrible disasters if they're not handled well. But we do have ways of handling them, and even the Ebola crisis of a few years ago was in the end handled not so badly at all. In the end, we lost far too many people in Central and West Africa, but it took a course that showed that you can manage even these horrific health disasters and handle them well.
You know, you talk about Ebola, and we talk about also SARS and MERS. Those outbreaks right now had much higher mortality. We don't know what's going to happen with this, but you can't, with each one of these different modalities, you can't say that it's going to follow the same pattern. And what scares me about our participation in it is, and you can't deny this, we as a country, our government, our administration, has pulled us really back out of the world. we're not as
international
connected.
Cooperation.
Yeah.
Sure. Multilateral efforts are clearly anathema to this administration. And yet, here again is another case where, you know, this time of all times is when you do need sober and collective action. And collective action is not what this administration is about. America first. Is not a slogan that's going to help you through this crisis.
No, and now let us get on to the other 800-pound gorilla in the room, and that is the public's total misunderstanding of the what's going on Wall Street, where in the past 4 days, 12% of the value of the market has evaporated, and it's become a big news story. And Jill and I, well before anybody else, we were talking about this. The stock market is not falling just simply because of the coronavirus. I mean, you have the Bernie Sanders effect. You have the political effects, not only in this country, but you've also what's going on in Europe. I mean, it all adds together, but if anybody, and I'm not a big stock market follower, but I am a news follower, and for the past several weeks, major corporations and companies, even companies I dislike for what they did years ago, Goldman Sachs have predicted that a market correction was coming. And sure, you do have a market correction, and your market correction, unfortunately, is coming at a time where the world, on many different levels, the world, not only this country, is fairly unstable.
Except, and this is the frustrating thing, the way that the story is presented, you've got a situation. Well, the stock markets are crashing. You know, panic. We've got this virus that the mortality rate of which is not, shall we say, akin to Ebola. But panic. If you say to someone, you've got immediate climate where basically relentlessly, this is the information that you're given all day long. If I said to you, check the CDC website, you know, you're not meant to wear a mask if you're not sick, as a matter of fact. It's not good, you know, or you're not dealing with a person who is sick. What would you say to that piece of information? You'd have to say, well, either the CDC is corrupt or Jill doesn't know what she's talking about. Because the visual image, for example, is people walking around with masks on. So,
sure.
Putting
it bluntly, it's a time for an upsurge in common sense, and that's not what we're getting.
Right.
The point about overevaluation in the financial markets calling out inevitably is these things a correction. I love that euphemism in the financial markets, a correction, and it was bound to come. But what we have, of course, is a very convenient, as it were, trigger. For when it comes, I think all those things that Marshall was listing before you chipped in, Jill, are true, and it's a complex overlay of many factors. But I think a combination of the big one at the back of it all, I think, is the slowing down in the China economy as a whole,
right,
which has had its inevitable ripples across the rest of the world. But the trigger for it has been the very distinct contraction in economic activity that the COVID-19, the coronavirus is encouraging, because clearly people who are worried are and people who can't get out of the the lockdowns in which they're faced with because of quarantining, all that has inevitably its economic effect, and we know how sensitive to the possibility of panic at the very least stock market decision makers are, and it was inevitable that this would happen, and it's, you know, the fact that it's happened 3 days in a row now is indication that it's serious. It's not a stock market disaster, But it's all part of a, you know, of a complicated overlapping situation that certainly deserves attention, if not panic, absolutely not panic.
You know, what's interesting, and what I don't understand is why people don't use words that other people in this world will understand on a situation. And basically, what's going on is that when you have something like this, Ebola, SARS, the coronavirus, and you add it to business, there's two words: supply chain.
Right.
You know, when people get sick en masse, and when people have to stay home en masse, the supply chain is interrupted. Business is interrupted on the first basic level, and then it's dominoes theory. The supply chain gets interrupted. Companies make less money. Companies have to cut back. I mean,
and then when you have spent the better part of I don't know how many years, you know, putting your supply chain outside of your control, you know, that's a factor.
Yeah.
But you know, please don't. Let's connect those dots. And we've got 2 minutes left, and let's not connect going back to something else that the two of you were talking about, the $1 billion that's been spent thus far with 4 months to go. You know, it's like, on the one hand, it's a disaster.
With 4 months to go in the primary season.
Excuse me, I misspoke. With 4 months to go in the primary season.
9 months to go before we go,
Yeah, and if, by the way, you take out Michael Bloomberg's 485...
There'll be a vote. Sorry, I'm interrupting.
No,
go ahead.
If you take out his $485 million or whatever
it's $685 million.
His $685 million, some of which could really go to Robin Hood Radio if you ask me, but that's another story. if you take out that, you still spent $300
million. I got a good uses for it, too.
Exactly. I can line up 10 people and just take a fraction of it, and we'd still be fine, and he'd still be where he is in the polls. But that being said, you've still spent $385 million with 4 months to go, and I think that number is low, actually.
Well, anyways, we've got a lot to look forward to in the next week, David.
That's the thing.
Oh,
every day.
The next weeks and months, yeah.
Yep. And, you know, it's funny when you have a situation where, on the one hand, you should connect the dots and use common sense. And on the other hand, God forbid you connect the dots and use common sense. And I can see where there's a bit of a conflict from a media standpoint there. I am sympathetic.
All right.
Just the facts, Ben. Just the facts.
Thank you, Sergeant Friday. And thank you very much, David Sarastuck, the Media Beat.
Thank you.
Of course, David joins us every Friday morning here on Robin Hood Radio. You can find David, of course, on his own website, themediabeat.us. And you can find this program always at robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand, click on the Media Beat with David Tarachuk.